It's that time of week where we kick off our Wednesday show with the view from the middle. One of the crazy games of last week was in his backyard, Bedlam. Fine journalist for USA Today, online usatoday.com. It's the red section of the actual paper. On Twitter, it's at George Schroeder. George, how are things with you in the Sooner State?
Things are good. How are you?
All is well. All is well. So somebody asked me last night, if Alabama wins it, makes it 6 undisputed titles in 10 years, 3 of the last 4, I was thinking we were kicking around the Huskers of the mid-90s, Carroll's USC run, you know, historically Bear Bryant, Frank Leahy's Notre Dame, and we're in an age of supposed parity, the scholarship limit. Is there any way around that? We're going to have to consider this Alabama team in the ultimate conversation because this is an insane powerhouse dynasty.
Well, I take issue with you there because I think we're already there.
Oh, okay.
Listen, I mean, regardless what happens this year, regardless what happens next year, regardless whatever, and I do think they're, you know, the overwhelming favorite to win the whole thing this year, but regardless of what happens, they're already the most impressive dynasty in the history of college football, in my mind, because it's never been harder to win them national titles than it is now. And they're at 5-9 seasons. 5-9 seasons. And nobody else has done it like that. And back in the day, it was a beauty contest where it was sort of poll-driven. And, you know, now you're sort of having to win it on the field. It's a different deal.
I will not take issue with your taking issue with me. I'll take issue with me for not having already anointed them because this will also be, which is astounding, 11 straight years in a major bowl. So, all right, we're on the same page there. You just were a step ahead of me. So, George, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Last week, Cowboys score with 1:03 left, down 1, go for 2, miss. I thought Dana Holgorsen the week before was on the money going for it because it was for the win with 15 seconds to go. In this one, however, 1:03 just needing a field goal, I kind of suspect about Gundy's call. What did you think?
I thought it was the right call for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think they thought they were going to win it in overtime. I think they thought they were the lesser team, and I think they were. And they had done everything they could to win the game, but were they going to pull it off? I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think they did either. Two, their kicker had missed a field goal and an extra point already. So I just look at them, and I think to myself, I think that was the right decision to go for two. I'm not a big fan of the actual itself.
Oh, the actual play call?
Yeah, I didn't like the actual play call itself. I have a little bit of an echo, by the way, today. So if you wonder why I'm even more off my game than normal, it's because I got an echo coming from our deal. I'm assuming that you can't hear it and the listeners can't. But it's really disconcerting to hear my terrible voice coming back at me.
Okay, so, well...
But Steve, I'm okay. I'll soldier through. What I didn't like the play call. I realized that the throw from Taylor Cornelius felt like it was a little bit late. It was clearly low and behind the receiver, but I thought it was fairly well covered as well, which is saying something for that terrible Oklahoma defense. I did like the decision to go for it.
Okay,
and I think it was the right decision. And you know, you go for it once you get the ball on the road. I think that's a good way to do it.
So when it gets to this time of year, a lot of people look at scheduling. And, of course, the Big 12 has what the old Pac-10 had, 10 teams. Everybody plays everybody. But the Big 12 decided to add a conference title game despite not extra teams. So if it ends up Mountaineers and Sooners 2 straight weeks, from what you wrote and from what people are saying, that this could actually damage their shot to get a playoff team, right?
Well, sure. It's like, let's take the hardest scheduling format there is, which is playing 9 games and playing everybody, so you never miss a hot team, right? You're going to catch them all. And then let's add a guaranteed rematch. And then, just because we're the Big 12, let's accidentally have it end up being, you know, 1 week later, or in this case, 8 days later, because the first rematch, the first game is Black Friday, November 20, herb, I guess, whatever day that
is. Yeah.
But let me say this. I know I wrote about that last week. Texas Iowa State play this weekend in Austin on Saturday. The winner of that game has a real good shot, depending on the outcome of the West Virginia-Oklahoma game. And by the way, West Virginia has to beat Oklahoma State this weekend in Stillwater. That's not an easy task. But depending on the West Virginia-Oklahoma game next Friday in Morgantown, the Texas Iowa State winner could be the actual other team in the Big 12 title game against that West Virginia-Oklahoma winner. So, but if there's a rematch and it's 8 days later, that's just sort of like, it feels like you keep trying to game the system, Big 12, and it keep making it harder for yourself, and then you keep falling on your face because everything you do, it's like Murphy's Law. That's what it feels like.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. So from the early days of this selection committee, we knew any personal angle meant that representative had to recuse themselves. And you wrote about Dan Radakovich of Clemson. But while it's mostly been one guy, I was unaware. So if Oklahoma remains in the picture, how is it that two people have to leave the room?
Well, so Joe Castiglione, each Power 5 conference nominates or has a sitting athletic director among the 13 members. So the five, you know, everybody's got one of those. And Rob Mullins is the Pac-12's guy. And, of course, he's also now the selection committee chair. Rob Mullins is recused from discussing Oregon, which at this point is, you know, not an issue because they're not in the mix. If they were in the mix for either the top 25, which they could be back in at some point, or certainly for the playoffs, he'd have to leave the room every time they discussed the group of teams they're in and voted on that group of teams that they were sitting in for the just purpose of the discussion. Well, Joe Castiglione is the Oklahoma athletic director, so he has to do that when Oklahoma's in, and that's only fair. What's interesting is, you know, a year ago, Kirby Hocutt, who's the Texas Tech AD, was the Big 12 rep, so there was no Oklahoma recusal there. Now there is one, and it's Joe Castiglione. That's the way it should be. What's even more weird is that former Virginia Tech coach Frank Beamer is recused from Virginia Tech, as he should be, and last year he was recused from Georgia because his son Shane Beamer was an assistant for the Bulldogs. And then in January or February, Shane Beamer took a job with Oklahoma. And when he did, Frank Beamer he can now talk about Georgia all he wants, but he can't talk about Oklahoma. And so all of a sudden, Oklahoma, which is the one team with a little bit of drama going on right now, with that, you know, sort of the what do we think about their defense and that kind of stuff, in terms of the actual legitimate playoff contenders, they're the one with a lot of drama, has two people that know it very well that are recused from being in the room. And I'm not suggesting that either one of them should be able to talk about Oklahoma because they both obviously would have conflicts of interest. I'm suggesting it's not necessarily good news when you don't know how the sausage gets made differently, so to speak, when two strong voices are out of a room who could speak to a team. Like, let's say it was the Texas Tech AD still, and let's say Frank Beamer's son was not on the Oklahoma staff. They could offer some analysis. And I don't know how it changes things, but I think it changes things. And we've only seen that really once before when Condoleezza Rice, who obviously teaches classes and stuff at Stanford, and Tyrone Willingham, who's had a son on the Stanford football staff at the time, I don't know if he still is or not, were both recused from Stanford at the same time. But Stanford was never, in those 2 years they were both recused from Stanford, Stanford was not in the mix for an actual playoff berth.
Right.
So this potentially could be kind of an interesting situation. And again, well, I'm not suggesting that either of those guys should be able to talk about Oklahoma. They should not be able to. It's just weird that two members of a 13-member committee, which is a fairly large percentage, are recused from talking about a legitimate playoff contender.
No, we'll see how that plays out. The group of five teams, one issue I think we see, sometimes they get more support among the writers than the selection committee. Last week, I think it was you mentioned Utah State, who lost at Michigan State opening day, and now they've won 9 in a row, and in 6 of those games, they've got 56 or more points. This is a pretty fun team, pretty cool story, especially when you have a program like Utah State with an alum like Matt Wells as the head coach.
Well, yeah, and listen, earlier in the year they went to Provo and just blew the doors off BYU, which is a huge deal for them in state.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is a bad BYU team, but I don't think that matters much to Utah State. This is a really good Utah State team, and we talk a lot about UCF, and this week we're going to get saturated with UCF because College Game Day is going to Orlando in advance of their game with Cincinnati, so they've got a ranked opponent in the American Athletic Conference, and we're going to talk a lot about them with their 22-game win streak and everything else. All that to say, I'm not convinced that Utah State's not maybe the best Group of Five team. I know they don't have the same record. And so if UCF keeps winning, they're going to be the Group of Five's representative in the New Year's Six. But Utah State, you know, could have, would have, should have beat Michigan State in the first game of the year, and then they basically rolled everybody else they played. And you're right, they're a terrific story. I also think they're a really good team. Now, Mountain West is tough. You know, Boise, Fresno still got some things they got to deal with, but it's a fun story to this point.
Oh, George, I thought you cut out for a second there. Sorry, my bad.
No, I just stopped.
Okay.
We're all good.
All right.
I finished my thought. I stopped. I thought Steve would like to talk some more.
Okay, yeah, I do talk radio now. So LSU was in the first reveal at 3. They got shut out at home by Alabama. They'd already lost at Florida. They beat Arkansas by 7. I mean, that's your childhood team. You know what they've been like this year. They've beat Tulsa and Eastern Illinois, and that's it. And I know LSU has no shot, but kind of curious that they're still 7th despite 2 losses ahead of some Power 5 1-loss teams.
Yeah, and it was shocking last week when they only dropped 4 spots. And we have to, you know, have to say, hey, we rank these every week as though we never ranked them before, and we go in with a clean sheet of paper and all that kind of stuff. And I know they really try to do that. But can you tell me with a straight face, and look, Rob Mullins does a tremendous job at this, and he's doing a good job as a spokesman. Can you tell me with a straight face that if you didn't already have LSU ranked number 3, that if you first time ranked them on the Monday, which is when they do it, on the Monday after they lost 29-0 at home against Alabama, that you'd have them ranked 7th?
No way.
I don't know how anybody could say that if they hadn't already had them ranked 3rd. That said, I was a little surprised they didn't move again this week. I do think there's a ceiling. I don't think there's any way, barring crazy chaos and a bunch of 2-loss champs, that they would have any shot to get in to the playoff. In fact, they'd be behind even a 2-loss Georgia that they beat, frankly. But it is amazing because they've got a really nice defense, and they've essentially got a no-dimensional offense. You know, it's not very good. Their offense isn't very good. If you don't have a very good offense, you're not keeping up with these good offensive teams anymore. That's how this works. The same day they were getting shut out by Alabama, that Florida team that was supposedly a good loss on the road for them was getting drilled by 3 touchdowns against a Missouri team at home, in Gainesville, I mean, against a Missouri team that was looking for its first SEC win. Now, you know, Florida rallied to beat South Carolina this week at home, this last week at home, which is nice, but I just don't see the resume for LSU. I understand that they beat Miami. I understand they beat Auburn, but not very good, as it turns out. So they're basically hanging everything on the fact that they beat a bunch of teams with winning records, but I don't think they're a bunch of good teams with winning records.
No, I agree. It's strange. I mean, fortunately, they're not going to sneak in because of it. Right, one last thought for George Schroeder of USA Today, NBA related. Your home state team, the Thunder, lost their first 4 games of the year. They've won 9 of 10. That Carmelo Anthony trade looks really good with your namesake, Dennis Schroeder, playing really well. So among the fans and media in your backyard, what's the buzz about this team now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They started 0-4, and they're now, what are they, 8-5 or 9-5, whatever they are. And they're doing it recently for almost 2 weeks without Russell Westbrook, who's been out with a left ankle sprain. He's going to be back here shortly. I don't know if it's tomorrow or soon thereafter. He should be back. But you're right. In Westbrook's absence, the George Schroeder combination, as I like to call it, all George is in a Schroeder, and it's really nice to have my name right there, George Schroeder. Obviously, it's Schroeder, but that combination has been really good. And I'll tell you, I think they're a better team than they were a year ago. And here's why: when Russell Westbrook comes back, the trade to get Schroeder ends up making their their backup point guard, sort of their second team rotation, which is such a big deal in the NBA, much more potent offensively than they've been in the past. In the past, their bench was so bad that they would maybe grab a lead with the starters and lose it all with the backups because everybody else's backups were better. I think they're way better now. Better fit with Schroeder as a backup point guard. He'll probably play alongside Westbrook some, but it's been a pretty encouraging story to start the year. The one thing I've learned, though, over the last few years of living in back in the Oklahoma City area and getting a little bit better acquainted with the NBA than I once was, is that it's such a long season that these teams go up and down and up and down, unless you're in the name of the Warriors, and obviously they got their own issues right now.
Yeah.
But so it's like, don't get too high because they're going to get low here in a minute.
Yeah, and the bottom line is on Westbrook, they're playing the Knicks tonight. He won't play, and they said because they don't have to play again until Saturday, so that gives him an extra 3 days to heal. George?
My days are all off. I'm still on college football time here, and I kept thinking they were playing the Knicks tomorrow night, but you're right, it's tonight.
Yep, 5 o'clock. Should be scintillating because you know how good my Knicks are. George, always a pleasure. Great info. Enjoy your weekend. And, man, catch up next week as we get ready.
Man, I look forward to it.
All right. Have a good one, George.